Hello and welcome to the OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in investment and economic policy from some of the world's leading commentators. In today's podcast, we will be covering the short-term disruptions and long-term transformations to global value chains, or GVCs, and international trade due to COVID-19. It's undeniable that globalization has been on the retreat as US-China tensions over the past 2 years have stoked economic nationalism and protectionism. How will COVID-19 shape this dynamic, as well as the opportunities from globalization and innovation for developing countries? This is Brandon Chai from Singapore, and today we talk to Professor Xiaolan Fu from the University of Oxford. Professor Fu is the Centre Director at the Oxford Technology and Management Centre for Development and specialises on the dynamics of GVCs, technological innovation and international trade. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome, Professor Fu.
It's a great pleasure, Brandon.
To begin with, I'd like to start off with my observation that we see COVID-19 has really profoundly affected international trade and it's disrupted global supply chains, especially those that are heavily reliant on China. Could you walk us through what the current economic data suggests in terms of the extent of disruption to FDI and trade right now?
The pandemic has hit the international trade and global value chain heavily. According to WTO, world trade is expected to fall by between 13 to 32% in 2020, which is to a maximum could be down by a third in 2020. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic disrupts normal economic activity and life. In terms of the impact of the pandemic on global value chain, according to Arctet, coronavirus outbreak has cost global value chain $50 billion in exports up to early March. And its impact on global value chain until now could double the figure. So all this has significant economic and social implications because behind of the trade and the foreign direct investment and the production in the global value chain, behind all of these figures are incomes, the decrease in incomes, the loss of jobs, the fluctuation in prices, commodity prices and the prices of manufacturers. And also this will have impact on income inequality and poverty.
I want to dig deeper into what you've mentioned about how this COVID-19 disruption of trade is sort of exacerbating a lot of the inequality that already exists in the world. How will the fragmentation of GVCs differentially affect developing countries in particular? Because I think it's quite well known that some of the higher value added portions of GVCs are a bit more adaptable and easily digitized. So for instance, in design and in marketing, for instance, people can work from home a lot easier, but manufacturing activities, which are a bit more capital and labor intensive, are a bit less adaptable and a bit more sticky. So in terms of the manufacturing landscape of Factory Asia, if, say, MNCs rebase their production to other developing countries, are we likely to see some sort of differentiated effects in terms of developing countries and developed countries right now?
Exactly. Its impact on the developed and developing countries are different. And its impact on different sectors are different too, because of the sectoral specific characteristics. So if we look at how the COVID-19 hits global trade and the GVC, there are three aspects, three channels that the COVID-19 hits trade. First is disruption to transportation, which, you know, everybody can feel the disruption in terms of air flights, in terms of the marine shipments, and also railway and also on the road transportation. So this leads to a reduction of international cargo transportation and also international control, travel control, and also station and the ports closure, and also restrictions to internal movement. So all these disrupt transportation, which is critical to trade, especially I think it's fatal to global value chain because the whole production was linked by the logistics to link the production of the spare parts at different locations. That is one disruption. The second disruption is disruption to production at the supply side. In addition to the supply chain disruption, also we see closure of the workplace and also closure of public transportation. So So even like Elon Musk, he wants to open the factory. But if the workers, you know, cannot take public transportation to workplace, many may be affected because not everybody can have a car. And also the policy of stay at home. So all this will affect the supply for production because it restricts the movement of people, which are key to production. And later, since March, we see the global spread of the pandemic and the demand and consumption drop quickly. We see a lot of cancellation of orders in both the developed and also especially in the developing country. Many developing countries like Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Malaysia, they're producing a lot of products, garments, textiles, or other products. And the cancellation of orders seriously affected them. So this is how the pandemic affects GVC. And the different sectors feel it differently because different sectors have different contact intensity. In fact, sectors with high contact intensity, like service, some services, like a hair salon, then it's high contact intensity, almost closed, like the air transportation hotels. And in some sectors, like financial services or in automated factories, then they are more resilient to the shock. The second aspect is the fragmentation of the value chain. If the value chain is less fragmented, more localized, they feel less the shock. And if the value chain is highly fragmented, like the electronics industry in East Asia, then it feels the shock heavily. That is why the factory Asia will be hit heavily. And also digitization degree, whether the sector is more likely to be digitized, like in bio industry, like in the financial services or business services industry, they can move to online to provide services, or they can use the computer to control the robots and still carry on the production. They are more resilient to the shock. If not, then you will be hit heavily by the pandemic. And also different countries, the developing countries, because the digitization degree, the level of digitization in developing countries are much lower than in the developed countries. That's why developing countries, even in the same industry, will be hit because of a lower level of digitization. And also different countries use different quarantine measures. And how strict you use the quarantine measure will also affect. And sometimes it's more likely the developing countries, some developing countries use much stricter quarantine measure, like in China, probably the world's most strict quarantine measure. In Europe, you can see people still working. So it's quite different. And in different countries, they have kept the factory running by using kind of half of the employees using the shift arrangement. So the quarantine measure also will affect. And all this will lead to different impacts on services versus manufacturing. Manufacturing is being hit more heavily. Although in services, then we have to see some contact-intensive services will be almost closed, or we see a lot of bankruptcy. But in some other services which can be digitized and also use the social distance to keep it alive, and even some are growing very fast, like the telehealth, e-learning, e-health, and the e-business. We see e-business this year grow very fast. And the ArcDat data shows that a surge in e-business in the first quarter. So as you said, factory Asia will be hit because of the manufacturing, because of the fragmented value chain, and also because of the differences in digitization in the different sectors in these countries. But I think we have to look deeper into the impact on factory Asia. I think the challenge is not all the production will be moved away from factory Asia. But I think it's less production will be in Asia because the multinationals, as a response, they will make their supply chain diversified. They will diversify their supply chain. The value chains will be more regionalized and even localized. And all these will push a wave to move some of the production away from Asia. So Asia will feel the pain. In all the continents, Asia probably in this aspect will feel the most. However, the value chains are also can be affected, like you mentioned, the stickiness. If they are some of the value chain, first, they are intent to close to the market. So the market size, the large population in Asia will be affected to attract, still keep some multinationals production activity here. That is one. Secondly, whether the local resources, local skills, local suppliers, the more mature, the more rich the local resources, which elsewhere cannot replace it, substitute it, and also the cost-effective local skills make it profitable. This also will be a reason, especially not only profitable, but such kind of pool of labor force with certain level of skills. If there's no other places can substitute you, Asia will still be able to attract the multinational. And also the local supply chain make it very cost effective to organize the whole production and the assembly. All these factors will make the value chain more stick to the local place. Therefore, for Asian countries, first is they should create, they enjoy the large market, and some countries have some local resources, and they should increase the local skills and make it much less replaceable. And also, these skills, not only labor workers' skills, but also knowledge, the R&D innovation, all these are important factors which contribute to the local stickiness.
I wanted to shift gears somewhat and to sort of situate what you've been saying in the US-China trade dynamic, because as you very well know, it's been a rather tempestuous relationship over the past 2 years. We saw a phase one agreement to the US-China trade dispute emerge in January, but the purchase order obligations for American goods and services that was imposed on China, that was actually considered very ambitious even before COVID-19 worsened. I'm kind of wondering, in the light of recent developments and the impact on global value chains, do you think the US will actually have the supply side capacity to meet these demands and China will have the necessary demand to even fulfill these purchase orders right now?
I have to say the US-China relationship is at its lowest point at the moment. I think the sign of the first phase one trade agreement is a good sign, a factor push the country get closer and repair the relationship. However, the tension increases since the pandemic, since March. I think when in January and February, Donald Trump is much more positive and praises China's efforts. But since March, he suddenly changed his tone and his strategy. And so the relationship are quite worrying, very worrying. Let's look at the trade agreement. I think in terms of implementation of the phase one agreement, both sides have the motivation to honor it, to carry on, to fulfill it. Why? First, from China's side, China is not the one that initiated the trade war. China made great efforts to reach this agreement, given heavy pressure from the US and also the nationalism arising inside China as a kind of response to the US extreme pressure. So China should have the motivation to honor it. And also what I can see, the evidence so far is that China still intends to fulfill the agreement. On the US side, because of the election is the fundamental reason that pushed Donald Trump to play the China game, blame China to get himself away from the responsibilities of the worst situation in the US due to the pandemic. However, if he gets the US-China trade deal done, and that will be a plus for him, that will be an achievement for him. So I think the Trump administration still has the motivation to get agreement fulfilled. However, I think the factors that you raise are very real factors. One is the capacity of supply in the US because of the quarantine, the policy measures to respond to the COVID-19. And on the other side is for China. China was hit really heavily by the pandemic, not because of the high numbers of death. Actually, compared to the US and other European countries, it's much lower. But China used the very strict quarantine measure. Factories are shut down completely. Transportation stopped completely. So the whole economy just kind of shut down for more than a month. And it's in a very difficult recovering process to get people's confidence back to work out of home, to go back to workplace. So I think the domestic demand in China is not as high as at the start of the year. And also the China's capacity to buy, to import from the US also constrained because the production, it was heavily interrupted, and the fiscal income of the government are affected, and the demand is significantly reduced. So this is a real factor.
Thanks for sharing those insights. To round off, I was wondering if you could give some closing comments on what is the likely effects of COVID-19 on the labor-intensive aspects of GVCs. You've already alluded to this when you talk about contact intensity and the concept of how human reliance is in some sense the weak link in GVCs. So with the supply chain disruptions inadvertently accelerating research and R&D into automation, industrial robots, and AI, do you think that developing countries need to make a lot more informed policy choices to sort of capture the innovation opportunities in the new post-pandemic GVCs?
Yes, I think you raised a very important the policy choices for the developing countries in the post-COVID-19 era. I think the long-term effect of COVID-19 will accelerate the trend of automation and the digitization. This is not just the force of the COVID-19. I think this is accelerating the trend, deepening the trend that already occurred before the COVID-19. There are two reasons before that. First is a wave of deglobalization, although I don't think it will succeed, but it reflects some of the situation and the social discontent in some of the countries and the rise of the nationalism or populism. So there is a talking about reshoring and also reshoring the manufacturing back to the industrialized countries, to the US or to Europe. So, and this will get some political support in the society. So this is one of the initial push factor. There is another factor is the fourth industrial revolution. The fourth industrial revolution, one of the main features is the convergence of the technology lead to smart manufacturing, automation, the use of artificial intelligence, 5G, cloud, big data, blockchain, etc. So all this leads to the digitization and automation, not only in services, not only in manufacturing, but also in services. So this trend has been deepened by the COVID-19. So COVID-19, there are two pushes already there, and the COVID-19 is a third one, which I think will seal this trend. So I think automation will be a trend in the next 10 years in global production and also digitization in both manufacturing and services. And also not only in the private sector, but also in the public services delivery. I think the model of value creation and also the way of life is going to be changed by digitization, the fourth industrial revolution. And this poses huge challenges for the developing countries, because the developing countries, in terms of the level of digital infrastructure, the skills in the whole population, digital skills, are all lagged behind. And this technical change is very much biased towards capital and towards skilled labor. And therefore, all these are in the developing countries are the factors that the developing countries seriously lack of. And this will lead to a divergence of growth between the developed and developing countries. And we'll see the income inequality between the two groups will enlarge. And this will be the challenge. Of course, this could also be an opportunity if the developing countries can seize the opportunity offered by the fourth industrial revolution. But in order to seize that, we need policy responses. I think this will come in four aspects. First, overall is to build up the digital competencies in the developing country in four aspects. First is to develop the skills, building up people's digital skills for the future. This includes the basic IT skills and also not only to use the IT, but also to create new technology in this fourth industrial revolution era. And that needs a mindset change and particular skills, the use of AI or to write some algorithms. This means the whole education system. From the primary school to middle school to higher education to vocational education, all this needs to be reformed. And also this change is not only for the young generation, this is very, very important, but also for the people already in the workforce in their 40s, in their 50s. Otherwise, they will lose out. They will be replaced. And also even older population so that they can use the digital services and benefit from the industrial revolution. That's number one aspect of the policy measure. Second is build up the digital infrastructure. The digital infrastructure like the 5G, big data center, the facilities to collect and to store and to analyze the big data. All these are digital infrastructure and the blockchain, etc. Without this, you have the skills, you don't have the infrastructure. Like in Africa, connectivity is still a problem. Even some places have the connectivity, they don't have the bandwidth. So build up this infrastructure is also very important. That's number two policy aspect. The third one is to develop a favorable environment for the digital economy and the digital business to grow and prosper. This including regulatory framework development, but also about digital entrepreneurship and the business environment to nurture more entrepreneurs in the digital era. Maybe we see more decentralized small business along the platforms using blockchains, etc. And we need such kind of environment and also training in entrepreneurship to help people to become successful in the digital economy. So that's the third aspect of the policy intervention needed. However, all these for the developing countries, especially the low-income countries, they won't be able to achieve this on their own because all these require either heavy investment or digital knowledge and the skills and the capacity in a regulatory development. So all this will need international cooperation and the technical assistance. So that's the fourth area of policy intervention needed, which is provide support to the developing country, especially the low-income country, through international innovation cooperation and the technical assistance.
Thanks for your insight. And I think you're definitely right. COVID-19 is the unescapable catalyst to digitize and decentralize economic activity in both the public and private sectors. And international collaboration is needed to assist the low-income countries. On a final note, I'd like to say thank you for joining us today, Professor Fu. It's been a real pleasure to speak to you today and hear your thoughts about the current state of international trade, global value chains, and the US-China relationship. To listen to more of OMFIF podcasts, please check us out on the OMFIF channel on both Spotify and iTunes. If you have enjoyed listening, please subscribe to our channel. If you've appreciated this podcast, please do leave us a review.